WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, pre-recorded Henry. Good morning. My name is Arthur, and it's the 2nd of September, 2020. Over the weekend, I was reading a little bit about a ghostwriter for the series, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. So I decided to play another selection of The Quarter Hours with starring Bob Bailey. This is episode 391, The Matter of the Medium. Well done. With an original air date of the 14th of May, 1956.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Hi, Johnny. Pat McCracken at Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Hiya, Patsy. What's on your mind?
Had your fortune told lately?
Nope, and I don't think I want to. The last time, it came true.
Oh, what was it?
Well, this Madame Gaga went into a trance, or whatever you call it, and...
Oh, trance, boys, if you didn't know.
Yeah, anyhow, she told me I was going to become an insurance investigator, and I've been stuck with it ever since.
Sad, sad. But now, how'd you like to try your hand as a psychic investigator?
Sure. What do I do?
Drop over, will you?
I'm on my way.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the matter of the medium. Well done. Expense account item 1, 115, taxi to the office of Pat McCracken at Universal. I hadn't seen Pat since he'd ruined my Southern California vacation by insisting I tie it in with the Jolly Roger matter in the Lamar case, where my expense account, for some strange reason, came out to a right nice figure. I've even included the case of V.O. that I'd sent him for having handed me those investigations. So I didn't know whether he was going to be nice to me or to rub my nose in the dirt. As it turned out, he didn't know either.
Now, I don't quite know whether this is going to be another soft touch for that expense account of yours, or a completely crazy one, or a real rub. Tommy Green seems to think the latter, though I don't see why particularly.
Yeah, who's Tommy Green?
Mid-Eastern Life down in New York. Oh, but just bill me as usual.
Sure, okay.
Now, Tommy says he's run into this sort of thing before, but not on so big a scale. That's why he's worried about it.
Pat, you still haven't told me what.
Oh. Now, one of his clients happens to be a sweet young thing named Carol Sharp, 26 or 7, beautiful, badly spoiled.
Mm, love him that way.
What?
Nothing. Go on.
Yes. She lives alone in a swank penthouse in the East 50s down there in New York, playgirl. Tommy holds a $110,000 policy on her. Straight life.
Beneficiary?
Her family, mother, and a couple of kid brothers.
No father?
No. The others live over in Marchunk, PA. That's where her father made the dough that keeps her in the penthouse and keeps the others living well in the old family manse.
So, what's the problem? Somebody threatening her life?
I don't know, Johnny. It depends on what you mean by threatening. She's just requested Tommy to change beneficiaries.
What's so unusual about that?
Well, one of them is to be a man named Tony Ricardo for $30,000.
Oh, so she's fallen for the guy and is making the nice gesture.
Maybe. We don't know yet. The other is a so-called medium, Madame Celia something.
Uh-oh. I've heard it before. Turn the family fortune over to me and I'll get in touch with dear departed Papa.
That's what it looks like from here. She's being took.
But how could it be any of our business?
Yeah, last time Tommy was requested to change a beneficiary to a medium, his hale and hearty young client suddenly turned up dead.
And they pinned it on the medium?
Mm-hmm. Apparently this sort of thing goes on quite a bit. So it has Tommy worried, so he asked for you.
All right, just what's he want me to do?
What do you want to do?
Break out the old crystal ball, Pat, and we'll see. Expense account item 2, transportation, Hartford to New York and the offices of Mid-Eastern, where Tommy Green turned out to be a mild-mannered, thoroughly likable, successful insurance broker.
Come in, Mr. Dollar. Glad you could make it.
How do, Mr. Green?
Sit down, won't you?
Thanks.
I suppose Pat McCracken's told you what's on my mind.
Only that you think one of your clients is being taken for the proverbial sleigh ride by some spiritualist.
As you no doubt know, Mr. Dollar, spiritualism is a recognized, well-established religion.
Sure, of course.
However, as in any other, there are charlatans. And some of these mediums, as they call themselves, take literally millions of dollars every year from people by trickery, by producing weird manifestations that appear to be genuinely supernatural.
Tommy, I know what you mean.
My own mother took a beating from one of those phonies when I was just a kid. You know, promised messages from father after he died, and at 25 bucks a try.
Wow. No wonder you're suspicious of them.
And especially of one Madame Celia Morgana Morgana.
Have you seen this, madam?
No, but I believe you'd better.
Mm-hmm. Have you changed, what's her name, Carol Sharp's policy yet?
No, but I'm afraid I can't stall her much longer.
And you're afraid that once you do change it, Carol ain't going to be long for this world, huh?
It's happened before, Dollar.
Yeah. Well, I can't just barge in on this Madame Morgana Morgana, announce that I'm an insurance investigator, and then another... Hey, wait a minute. What's the name of this other beneficiary?
Tony Ricardo.
Yeah, who is he?
All I know is what Carol's told me.
Love affair?
Yeah. He sounds like a playboy. They do a lot of nightclubbing together.
Money?
I don't know.
Family?
I don't know that either.
But he's in for 30 of the 110,000 if anything happens to her.
If we change the policy. How are you going to start?
Well, if this Carol Sharp is all Pat McCracken says she is, this case could have a very pleasant beginning. I stuck around with Tommy Green long enough to listen to him verify what Pat had said about Carol's family, wealth, etc. Take a look at a snapshot of her and get her address. Item 3180, taxi to the Bell Towers at 614 East 52nd Street, a magnificent modern apartment hotel at the edge of the East River. Real swank. The place even had its own private docks with several well-kept cruisers tied up and even a small seaplane. Pat, I warn you, this expense account ain't going to be small.
Yes, may I help you, sir?
Yes, you can. I'd like a small apartment for a few days.
Are you alone, sir?
Yes.
Well, we still have a small five-room penthouse suite for $1,500 a month.
Huh?
With complete maid service, of course.
Oh, of course.
And on a minimum one-year lease, of course.
Look, all I want is a bedroom, living room type of thing, and I may be here only a week or so.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm afraid there's nothing we can do for you unless... Tell me, sir, do you have any recommendations from any of our tenants?
Look, I'm an insurance investigator. Here, my card.
Oh.
And I want something as close as possible to Miss Carol Sharp's apartment. But I don't want to have to rob four
private
docks.
Private investigator, did you say?
Yeah, that'll do.
Oh, dear. Surely Miss Sharp can't be in any kind of... I mean, think what it would mean to our reputation, Mr. Dollar.
Stop worrying, will you? She isn't in any kind of trouble. Yet. But for reasons that, well, they don't particularly concern you, I need to be as close to her as I can.
Ah, what a pleasant thought.
And for the same reason, I don't want her to know what my business here is.
Of course. Believe me, Mr. Dollar, I'm the very soul of discretion.
Good. See that you stay that way. Now, have you got a room or two for me?
Oh, let me see. Now, she's in penthouse A on floor 12. There is a two-room on 10, very nice, at $325 a week. With complete service, of course.
Okay, I'll take it.
Very well, just sign this card, please. And, oh, dear, I'm afraid I must have a week in advance.
Oh, sure, sure. What's a measly $325? When the two bellboys who carried up my two bags at a buck apiece settled me in 1013, I must admit the place looked almost worth a tab. Tastefully furnished, spit and polished clean, and with a plate glass panorama view of the bustling East River. Yeah, I wish for a moment that I could afford this sort of lodging. First thing I did was telephone to an old pal.
Detective Division, Sergeant Singer.
Hey, look, Sarge, I need a rundown on a dirty crook.
Who's speaking, please?
He's going around acting like an insurance dick, but he's a crook.
Oh, what's his name?
Dollar, Johnny Dollar. And I tell you, that punk is as crooked as he
can. Don't go any further. We know all about him. We got word here in New York that we'll put a stake out on him the minute we spot his hideout.
That copper I can give you.
Good, Johnny. Just where you staying.
Hi, you old reprobate. I'm at the Towers. He's 52nd.
The expense account, huh?
How'd you guess? I want to see you.
In exactly 21 minutes, I'll punch the time clock and be over.
Room 1013.
Right. Oh, and be sure it's with soda.
Easy, boy. Give you any encouragement, you'll want to name the brand of scotch. Item 4, 1220. One bottle of scotch and setups for two.
Sure, Johnny. Knew her from when I was doing a nightclub beat.
And she's lived in town for quite a while, huh?
Yeah, a couple of years at least.
How much do you know about her, Randy?
Not much. She's loaded. Throws her money around like it's confetti.
Yeah, I figured that when I found her staying here. Father left it to her.
Coal miner, wasn't he?
Owned a big colliery in Frankville, Pennsylvania, somewhere near Mochunk.
Well, it must have paid off good in the old days. But tell me, what's... you want to give me a refill?
Yeah, sure. Ever hear of a Madame Senior Morgana Morgana?
Huh! I've chased that blousy old phony from one end of the island to the other. I look into the crystal ball, and I see into the past, the present, the future, and into your pocketbook. Yeah, and man, she could. I think she's operating somewhere over on the Jersey side now.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
But she's still operating.
Operating with real class. Last time we picked her up and kicked her out.
How do you mean?
Nice apartment over here on the east side. Classy clientele. Say, is Carol Sharp hooked by her?
Appears so. Just how does she work?
Well, the usual way the phonies do. Goes into a trance, writhes around like a seasick rattlesnake, then gives with the voices.
Voices?
You know, speaks with the tongues of the departed.
Hey, look, where's the money angle, Mr.?
Well, she makes like the trances cause her great agony of body and mind. Starts with the pitch about doctor bills. And the more clients can afford, the more they pay.
And they don't get wise?
Yeah, she's smart. Works it like a serial story. You know, continued next week?
No, I don't know. Brief me.
Well, at each seance, she tells them just enough to whet their appetite for more. Leads right up to the next hot bit of information, has them hanging on every word, then bingo, the trance is over.
Ah.
However, if you come back next week when I recover my strength. So they pay her off and they're back a week later to play games with her again.
I don't know. It seems pretty obvious to me.
Well, that's because you've never attended a seance run by an artist at it. Hey, why don't you?
I think I will.
I'll see what I can dig up for you.
You mean there are still some going on around town?
Some. Dozens, hundreds probably. Kick them out of one place, they move to another, unless you can tie a serious rap on them.
Which reminds me, Tommy Green told me...
Yeah, I handled that one myself, a Madame Gabor Chernarsky. Got a sweet old man to sign over his fortune and had him knocked off. Oh, that's a dirty racket.
Yeah, religion, science, the professions, they all leave an open door to the racketeers, I guess. Okay, set up a seance for me, Randy. In the meantime...
Yeah?
Run me a make on Tony Ricardo, will you?
Ricardo?
Yeah, he's the other one Carol Sharp wants to name as a beneficiary.
Besides the medium?
Yeah. Beneficiary of a whopping big life policy.
Okay, good, Johnny. I'll call you later.
While I took my time showering and changing clothes, I racked my brain trying to cook up a smooth way to meet Carol Sharp. Under no circumstances did I want her to suspect the reason behind my interest in her, at least not for the present. Requisite number one, then, meet the gal. I was just tying my tie when the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Randy, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Rand. Set up a date with a medium?
Yeah, for tonight, but that's not what I'm calling about. Johnny, I could write a book for you.
Huh?
On Tony Ricardo. And I don't think you'd like it. You seen him yet?
No, but I will as soon as I can locate him.
Well, if he finds out what you're working on, he'll locate you.
Fine.
Yeah, just be sure you see him first. And that you're carrying a gun.
Thanks, Randy.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, well, sometimes the best laid plans can take a terrible beating when a lovely girl steps into the picture. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That was episode 391 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Matter of the Medium Well Done, with an original air date of the 14th of May, 1956. Again, that's a quarter hour daily that they ran for, I think, ran for a couple of years. But anyway, my name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. We're going to bookend this next episode with the yours truly, Johnny Dollar. I'll play the second of The Matter of the Medium Well Done to conclude the program. But now it's episode 259 of Gunsmoke, Saddle Sore Sal, with an original air date of the 24th of March, 1956.
Gunsmoke. Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun Smoke, starring William Conrad. Story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
I think that come from down there someplace, Mr. Dillon.
Well, let's take a look.
My golly, I don't know. There sure ain't no sign of nobody.
Now, that was in back of the Dodge House, between it and the livery stable. Come on.
It sounded like it. What in the thunder they shooting at?
I don't know.
Well, it sure did sound like somebody yelled after that first shot.
Look, Chester, wait here and keep an eye on the street. I'm going to walk on toward the back of the livery stable, huh?
Well, all right, but you be careful back there in the dark now.
Oh, no. No call to get spooked. All right. Come on out of there. You hear me?
You go mind your own business. You better drift, mister. You buy more trouble than you can handle. Let go of me.
Give me that gun.
You got no right to...
When you throw a rifle on somebody, young lady, it'd scare them more if you close the breech block. And reload it, maybe, when it's a single shot.
Oh, darn single shot. I'd have got him hadn't been for that. That in the bad light.
Got who?
None of your goddamn business.
It might be. I'm the U.S. Marshal here in Dodge.
Marshal?
Chester!
Coming, Mr. Dillon.
How old are you, young lady?
Well, I've passed my teens.
You don't live around here, do you?
I wouldn't live up here if I owned it. I'm panhandle and proud of it.
Long way from home, aren't you?
Depends on what you call long.
What's your name?
Sally Burkoff, if it's any of your business.
My gracious, it's a girl. She done that shooting, did she?
Yeah, it looks that way. Who was it yelled when you fired that first shot, Sally?
Maybe it was me.
It was a man's voice.
God-darn single-shot rifle.
Who's with you? Who'd you come up from the panhandle with?
Nobody.
How'd you get here?
I rid my horse. How'd you think?
Where is it, in the stable?
I ain't got money for stables. He's bedded down back there under a tree.
With what? Did you bring hay along with you?
Some fell out through the fence there.
Fell out through the fence.
A horse that's been rode hard needs grain. Some grain fall out too, does it?
There's some left in the feed box over there.
Uh-huh, I see.
Probably draw damp and spoiled for a morning. Other horses in the corral had already ate.
When's the last time anything spilled out for you to eat, Sully?
It's my business.
You gonna tell me who it was you shot at?
No, I sure ain't.
All right, come on.
I ain't done nothing, Marshal.
Moss Grimmick owns the stable. He might disagree with you.
It was gone to waste. Where are you taking me?
To feed you. Then we'll see about putting you up for the night.
Put me up where?
And the only place where I can be sure of finding you come morning. In jail.
In the early days of World War II, an organization was born. An organization which offered benefits to all members of the United States Armed Forces. It was formally opened in April 1942 at Madison, Wisconsin, and called the Army Institute. Its mission was to provide educational opportunities for millions of American youths entering the armed forces. The response from servicemen and women was immediate and enthusiastic. Later that year, the facilities were made available to the Navy, and in February 1943, the name was changed to United States Armed Forces Institute. This was the first USAFI. Today, there is a bigger, improved USAFI with five branches in various areas of the world. But the mission is still the same. The number one client is still the United States serviceman, receiving an opportunity to develop power through knowledge with USAFI.
So, well, just tell me where.
At home, that's where.
Oh, well, that's different. At home.
My ma's too old and broke down for any other kind of work. She's a gol darn good cook when there's anything to cook.
Been kind of hard going, huh, Sully?
It's my business.
Yeah, I figured it would be. Well, here's your hotel, young lady.
It sure ain't much of a jail.
You've been in better ones, have you?
I ain't never been in none before. Marshal, I don't want to go to jail.
Ah, come on. It's not as bad as it sounds. Just haven't got any other place to put you. Now, hello, Doctor.
Marshal, I want to report a shoot.
That's him. Give me that gun.
You let go of that.
Oh! You hurt me.
Now, you sit down in that chair and you stay there. Here's your gun, Chester.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Dillon. She grabbed it before I knew
what she was
up to. Doctor,
what's all this about?
She tried to kill me. Now, you saw her do it. And that's the third time tonight. I was waiting here to tell you. First time was about an hour ago near the Dodge House.
Yeah, I know. Why is she trying to kill you?
Just crazy, I guess. How would I know why?
You know why, all right, you sneaking yellow dog.
Sit down, Sally.
He stole money from me and Ma. All we had, $600.
That ain't so.
Wait a minute, Decker. What happened, Sally?
He come up through the panhandle last fall fetching a trail herd from East Texas. Fine breeding stock, he said they was. And he sold me 100 head for $6. I had $3 under the going price.
There, you see, nobody stole nothing from her.
Now, I remember that drive of yours last fall, Doctor. You started out with 2,500 head and didn't get here with more than about 400.
I just had some bad luck, was all.
Sure. Them cattle had the chokes, was all through the herd.
Cowpox, huh?
They was dying on him before he hit the panhandle. Only I didn't know it. And he seen a chance to unload 100 of them on me. They started dropping before he was gone 3 days. Last one died 2 weeks ago. When the chokes gets in a herd, there ain't nothing you can do.
That's one of the risks of the cattle business. You can't blame me for it.
You know they had it when you sold them to me.
I don't suppose you told her that, did you, Doctor?
Of course not. When a man's out to make a deal, he don't have to tell what he ain't asked.
Even when the buyer's a girl?
That was a legal sale. Now, whose side are you on, Marshal? I come here for protection.
You mean to have the girl locked up or run out of town, maybe?
I sure do.
All right, Decker, you've made your complaint. Now get out.
Well, now, wait a minute.
I said get out.
Marshal, I'm just going to hold you responsible for anything she does.
You do that fine.
Standing up for that little wildcat.
Sally, if I was to let you go, what would you do?
Have another try at shooting Clem Dyker.
That's what I thought.
I ain't likely to miss him four times in a row.
All right, Chester, take her back and get her settled in one of those cells.
Yes, sir.
What are you aiming to do with me, Marshal?
I don't know, Sally. I just don't know.
Look worried about something.
Oh?
It's that young kid, Sally Burkhoff, right?
Yeah. Kitty, I'll be darned if I know what to do about her.
Well, Matt, as far as the letter of the law goes...
Yeah, sure, let her stand trial. She's guilty of stealing from the livery stable. She's guilty of attempted murder. And she'll probably go to prison.
Well, she's young... Court might consider that.
No, she's had a raw deal, Kitty. You know, they're just three of them, her and her mother and her eight-year-old brother. Huh. They couldn't make a go of farming their place, so she thought she'd try running cattle on it. Losing that money wiped them out.
That Clem Dyker ought to be strung up.
Yeah, but like he says, the deal was perfectly legal. Yeah.
Oh, man. Say, you want to play some draw poker with me and Chester and Miles McTagg?
Oh, not tonight, Doc.
Why not tonight? I've been working all week on my bottom-of-the-deck deal and my up-the-sleeve holdout. I'm ready for you, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Is he going to join us, Doc?
Nah, he says not. I think he's just sitting here worrying about that little Sally Burkhoff. Well, I guess I don't blame him too much.
Well, you might as well sit in, Matthew. I'll likely lose to everybody at that kind of a day.
What do you mean?
You remember them ore concentrates, iron pyrites, the stuff I took in on account when the Black Hawk mine closed down?
Yeah, a couple of tons or so, wasn't it?
3 tons. And they allowed $150 for them. Figured they might run twice that in silver. Well, I got the assay report from Iola today.
What are they worth?
Less than $50. Wouldn't even pay to ship them to the smelter, so... You better come get in on the game, Matthew. My day for losing.
Hey, wait a minute, Miles here. Just a minute. I'm getting a lovely idea here.
Hmm?
Yeah, it's lovely. Does anybody else know about that assay?
Well, not yet, Doc. Why?
How would you like to get your $150 back?
I have a due and proper respect for money.
Good, good. Are you willing to let any money over that go to a worthy cause?
If I get my $150, I won't even ask whether it's worthy.
What are you talking about, Doc?
Now, who could I get to help? You know, a sort of kindly swindler who could fool somebody good.
Now, look here, Doc.
There's just one person. Me. Matt, it couldn't work without me.
Well, I'm not sure what couldn't work, Doc, but from the look on your face, it's Larson.
Come on, Miles. We've got work to do.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Hey, honey, I'm home. Daphne.
Drop dead.
Uh-oh, what's the matter, honey?
Don't you speak to me, you Don Juan.
Don Juan? Daphne, I'm no Don Juan. No hablo español.
Very funny. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, it was no prize winner, but...
Neither are you, you Lothario.
I've often wondered, what's a Lothario?
I don't know, but that's what the wives on TV always call their husbands. I guess it applies.
Do you want me to go out and come in again?
As far as I'm concerned, you can go for a long walk, preferably on a short pier.
Well, oh, come on, Daphne, what's wrong?
Your good friend Harry called, and he spilled the beans.
Which beans?
He said, quote, "Tell Joe he was right about those blondes. They're great," unquote.
Blondes?
That's what he said. Well?
He didn't say blondes. He said bonds. Savings bonds.
What?
Sure, I buy them on the payroll savings plan. And I told Harry he ought to do it, too. Savings bonds have a guaranteed interest that pays back $4 for every three, which is a pretty good investment.
That's a pretty good story, too.
It's true, so help me. That's why Harry's so happy. Savings bonds are great.
Well, maybe you're right. You wouldn't really fool around with blondes, would you? You're too faithful and sweet and kind and...
Fast talking.
Plenty of time all the way around, Mr. Dillon. I just don't reckon Doc's little dido is going to work.
Well, there's nothing certain in this world, Chester.
Doggone it. I sure wished it had, though. Do my heart good to see that low-down diker get here.
Are you gentlemen alone?
Well, come on in, Miles. Come on in.
Well, I'd never have believed it. I figured Doc and me ought to team up and do this every week or so.
Yeah, well, you do, and I'll jail both of you. How much?
You wouldn't loosen up, would you, Matthew? Maybe let me take out just a little profit.
You get $150. Now, let's have the rest of it.
There you are. $820. And I think he'd even have gone another 100 if I'd held out.
Oh, this is enough. And it gives her a couple of $100 extra to pay for her trouble.
Oh, he was hopping from one foot to the other. I never saw a man in my life with so much larceny in his soul.
Chester, go get Sally, will you?
Yes, sir.
He had three men in a wagon waiting outside. They started loading up the concentrates to haul away the minute he'd paid me. I told the clerk to wait till he'd got them all on the wagon before he gave him that assay report from Iola. Well, I figured he ought to have it, seeing that he owns the concentrates now.
That was real generous of you, Miles.
Well, at least I got my 150 back. I think I'll kind of lay low for the rest of the day, Matthew. He's going to be madder than a hornet when he finds out.
Yeah, I expect he will. I'll see you later, Miles.
Yep. Right on in there, young lady.
What are you aiming to do, Marshal? You going to turn me loose?
Well, that depends, Sally. I can't very well turn you loose and have you walk right out of here and start shooting at Clem Diker again, now can I?
Then you might as well take me back to that cell.
Now, wait a minute, Sally. Suppose that you did kill him. It wouldn't get your money back, would it?
No, but it sure give me a deal of pleasure.
Now, suppose you had your $600 back with a couple of hundred to boot.
Oh, if there's a chance of that ever happening.
Yeah, but suppose it did. Would you be willing to get on that horse of yours and hightail it back to the Panhandle?
Marshal! You don't mean he's going to give that money back?
Yeah, here it is. All of it. And $220 besides.
You mean it's mine? I can take it?
You can take it. And get. And good luck to you.
Oh, well, I'll be as soon as it's gone.
Well, am I busting in on something?
No, come on in, Doc. Sally's just leaving to ride back to the Panhandle.
The Panhandle? Is that so, girl? Well, you be mighty careful. There's a lot of mighty desperate characters down that way.
Oh, don't you worry none about me.
Sally... You give my regards to your Ma and Billy.
Yes, sir, I will. Thank you, Marshal. Bye.
Goodbye.
Well, Matt, it was hook, line, and sinker. I never saw a man get taken in so easy in my life.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, you know, I was born for that kind of a game. I may give up my practice and just start scheming my way through life.
That's a good idea, Doc. I hear that they need a doctor at state prison.
Oh. Marshal... I've been robbed by a pair of swindlers.
Oh? How did it happen, Diker?
Well, you ask him how it happened. He's one of them. Him and that storekeeper, Miles McTagg. $970.
Why, Dyker. Now, all I did was come and ask you to loan me $1,000.
Now, you talked like you'd found a good thing. Something you could buy cheap because the owner didn't know what it was worth. And then you let that phony assay report fall out of your pocket when you left.
Oh, why? Oh, now, that was just scribbling. It wasn't a real report.
I know that now. $900 a ton, it said. Why, them concentrates ain't worth $50. I just saw the real report after I'd bought the whole 3 tons.
Well, my. Well, you certainly did jump to a hasty conclusion, didn't you?
Marshal, Miles knew they was worthless when he sold them to me. Now, I want him arrested.
Did you ask him if he'd had them assayed, Decker?
Well, of course not. If I had, he'd have known. Well, he'd have known...
That you were trying to swindle him. And Doc, too, huh? I'm sorry, Decker. I don't see that you've got much of a case.
But he knew that I thought it... Well, I should have known I'd get no satisfaction here.
Well, it depends on whose ox is being gored, doesn't it?
I'm going over and talk to Judge Bent.
Yeah, you do that. Oh, and by the way, Dacker, you can stop worrying about the girl. I just ran her out of town.
I don't care if you...
Wonder how she'll make out down there in the panhandle.
Don't you worry, Chester. That kid'll make out wherever she is.
That old political character, Elijah Cuddlestone, was tremendously proud to be a part of the government of the United States. That pride shows through in this excerpt of one of his speeches. And it is my sincere belief, I believe that the United States of America is without doubt, indisputably, the most successful experiment in democracy, that is, in democratic rule, that the world has ever known. Well, democracy, of course, means rule of the people. It's from the Greek demos, people, and kratos, meaning rule, strength, or power. Most forms of government owe their names to the Greek. For instance, anarchy is from the Greek word anarchia, composed of an, meaning no, and archos, ruler. An anarchist wants no king, emperor, or president above him. An oligarchy is a form of government where a restricted few have supreme power. Oligarchy comes from the Greek oligos, meaning few, and archo, which means rule, ruled by a few. The Greek word hieros meant holy, and the word hierarchy once meant a government by officers of the church. Hierarchy now represents a system of graded authority. And the strange word ochlocracy means mob rule. In Greek, ochlos means crowd or mob. Words like these literally make politics Greek to most of us.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The script was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Meston. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns were by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear as Chester, Howard McGear as Doc, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. George Walsh speaking. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Okay, that was Gunsmoke, Saddle Sore Sal. I have a correction to make on the original air date. It was the 24th of March, 1957, not 1956. 1956 is the Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, that I've been playing. But either way, that was pretty interesting there, that propaganda in the middle of it. Seems like history repeats itself. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Right now, I have to fulfill an FCC obligation.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You would think with a pre-recorded show I could have corrected that mistake, but no. Here we go with episode 392 of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Matter of the Medium. Well done. This has an original air date of the 15th of May, 1956.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Randy Singer at headquarters, Johnny.
Oh, hi. More information on Tony Ricardo?
Only what I told you before. Look out for him.
Randy, that doesn't sound like anybody that a gal like Carol Sharp would be associated with.
Who knows? For a cut of her money, most anybody would be willing to act like a nice old coot. Till he got his hands on it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But now I thought you were going to set up a seance for me. Or couldn't you find a crystal ball?
I'm working on it. I'll call you.
Yeah, do that.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location New York City. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the matter of the medium. Well done. Three people to look up immediately. First, Carol Sharp, wealthy heiress who insisted on a funny change in the beneficiaries of a whopping big life insurance policy. Second, a questionable character named Tony Ricardo, who was scheduled to be one of those beneficiaries. Third, in the same category as Tony, one Madame Celia Morgana Morgana, self-styled psychic medium. Instead, I huddled with Tommy Green, the broker who handled Carol Sharp's policy.
But you haven't even seen Carol yet?
Nope.
Johnny, I can't stall off changing the beneficiaries of her policy much longer. You've got to do something about this.
Because you don't like mediums?
This one is a fake.
Or you don't like playboys with foreign names.
Listen, Johnny, I'm afraid that once she names them in her policy, her body will suddenly turn up floating around somewhere in the East River.
But what if I find they're okay? In spite of the opinion of Sergeant Singer of the NYPD.
What did he say?
Oh, not much. But he hinted that when I meet Ricardo, I'd better be carrying a gun.
Well, don't you see? That's exactly what I'm driving at.
As for the medium... Well, Tommy, you know as well as I do, there are a lot of perfectly legitimate, honest spiritualist churches all
Believe
over the country.
Believe me, Johnny, if this one ever saw the inside of a church, it'd be a miracle. She's a fraud.
How do you know? Ever met her?
I know how these phonies operate.
Ever met her?
No, I haven't. I haven't the least idea where to look for her. That's why I sent for you. But you haven't even seen Carol yet. Now, look.
Tommy, I've taken a place in her apartment hotel, the Bell Towers.
Oh, you expense account boys.
And I'll meet her as soon as I can, in my own way. Meanwhile, I want you to do something for me.
It'll help to get things moving, anything.
Find out some more about the beneficiary she wants to cut off.
Her mother and two brothers out in Mauchunk, Pennsylvania.
Find out how they're doing financially, among other things.
How, Johnny? Hire another investigator? I take it that you don't want them to know about it.
Well, why don't you cook up some kind of a news item about Carol, the local girl in the big city, and phone it into the local newspaper editor. Those small-town papers love that sort of stuff, and the editor will probably talk his head off about the family if you encourage him a bit.
Hmm. What kind of a news item?
Oh, anything that's harmless.
Sounds like something you'd be better at than I am.
Tommy, I've got other things to do. Plenty. Armed with the snapshot of Carol, I took a cab to the Bell Towers. And I hoped that somehow, and without making it too corny or obvious, I could figure a way to get next to Carol Sharp. As it turned out, it was both corny and successful. You see, the automatic elevator in the towers is a slow one.
Will you push the button for 12, please?
Oh, surely, miss. I'm only going to the...
What's the matter?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Here, I'll push it.
No, no, no.
Beg your pardon.
I'm sorry, but I can't believe this. Unless I'm psychic.
Now, look, mister. This city is too big and sophisticated for... Is something wrong with you? You did want to get off on the 10th floor, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Well, we're here. Floor 10, so... Mister, did somebody hypnotize you?
Yes. No. Oh, please, miss, excuse me. It's just that I can't believe... Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Well, when I was a kid, I used to have a dream over and over again about a beautiful girl, and her name was Carol.
What?
The same dream over and over, and it... Well, it startled me just now because... Well, because you look just like she did. Oh, but it's all nonsense, and I know it, and I apologize.
Carol, did you say?
Yes, but it was just a dream, and... Probably I just imagined that you resemble her, and I'm terribly sorry. I know what this must look like to you.
Yes. Like a veridical dream.
What?
A truth dream. It's a psychic phenomenon.
Oh, that. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't believe in that sort of stuff.
Oh? Well, it just happens that there are thousands of cases on record and by people of reputation and responsibility.
Oh, sure, sure. But now, excuse me, and again, I want to apologize for this, well, this embarrassing moment. Goodbye. I could see over my shoulder that she left the elevator door open until I'd gone into my suite across the hall. I sat down next to the broad window overlooking the East River, crossed my fingers, and waited. 10 minutes? 15? Hello?
Mr. Dollar?
Yes, who's that?
This is Carol.
What?
Your dream girl? Hello?
Oh, I get it. I made a fool of myself in the elevator, and now you're rubbing it in.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I hope you don't think I'm being forward, but I'd like to talk with you. About your dream, I mean. What's that mean?
And I was afraid you thought I was trying to pull a fast one in the elevator. But, how did you know who I am?
I just asked the desk clerk who was in 1013. My name is Carol Sharp.
Then it really is Carol. Well, that's amazing.
That's why I want to talk to you.
Well, there's a nice cocktail lounge downstairs.
In half an hour?
In half an hour.
Bye.
Dollar, you are a fast one. Now, let me see. Johnny Dollar.
Randy Singer.
Yeah, I want to know.
Why, what's the matter?
After what I've been talking to, this is a come down.
Now, what are you... you met Carol Sharp,
sure,
huh?
Did.
Oh, look, I've set up the seance I promised you. Still want it now that you've met the girl?
Sure. I want to find out what this stuff is all about, how those people operate and so on. Want to pick me up here at the towers?
Why don't you meet me here at headquarters, and you can look over the file on Tony Ricardo.
Good idea.
I'll be clear any time after 6.
Better make it around 7. I've got a date for cocktails.
Are you in town on a case, or...
With Carol Sharp.
Lucky dog. See you later.
To say that Carol looked like a vision when she swept into the cocktail lounge would have been a gross understatement. Her light blue cocktail gown was probably from Hattie Carnegie, but its lines were simple in the extreme, and it only served to accentuate the fresh, lithe figure and the natural beauty of the girl. Her blonde hair was drawn back tightly, and a silver blooming stole was draped carelessly over her shoulder. If I'd put on an act when I stared at her in the elevator, believe me, this was no act now.
I hope you don't think me too brazen for having called you the way I did.
You have no idea how glad I am. Will this be all right?
Oh, fine. Thank you.
I, I was afraid after that episode in the elevator you might have thought I was just some lonely bachelor trying to find a date.
Are you a bachelor?
I am confirmed.
Well, you just haven't met the right girl.
Well, there are times like this when I think perhaps the...
Your order, sir?
Oh, sure, point killer. Carol?
Sherry and bitters, please.
Sherry and bitters and V.O. over ice.
Thank you, sir.
Be honest with me. Do I really look like the girl you used to dream about when you were a little boy? Or did you dream about a little girl your own age who just happened to bear some resemblance to me?
Well, no. No, you see...
That's very important. You see, if it really was a veridical dream... Well, you see, the phenomenon of precognition would be involved, too, so to speak.
Precognition?
Yes. You're now knowing me psychically before you could possibly know about me by any natural means. Where have you lived most of your life?
Oh, all over. Here in New York, Hartford, Connecticut.
Eastern Pennsylvania?
Oh, never, except for an occasional trip to Philadelphia. But that wasn't until I was grown up.
Well, then you couldn't possibly have ever actually seen me, because all my life I've lived in Pennsylvania, in the coal mining district.
Well,
So your dreams of me... must have been due to some supernatural cause.
Ah,
there's
Carol.
No other explanation. Well, is there?
Carol, I...
Carry in bitters for the lady and...
Thanks. I'll sign that. Saved by the bell. Or rather, by the waiter. I'm afraid I came awfully close to admitting to Carol that I'd trumped up the whole dream business just to meet her and talk with her. She was certainly hep on the subject of things psychic, and I'm afraid a natural sucker for anyone who wanted to capitalize on her gullibility. Beautiful, intelligent, well-educated, but... Well, you'll see what I mean.
And although it's a terrible strain on her, these deep trances, I mean... I've received messages through her, Johnny, from my father.
Through this medium?
Yes, Madame Morgana Morgana.
And your father's dead?
He died 3 years ago.
Carol, are you sure about those messages?
Oh, yes, Johnny, I'm sure. That's why I want you to go and see. See these things for yourself, will you? Will you go to her with me?
Now, don't swing at me, but at this point, I think I'd go anywhere with you.
Johnny, I'm serious. I want to tell her about you anyway, and the veridical dreams.
Well, all right. When?
I'll call her tonight, and perhaps we can see her tomorrow night, all right?
Yeah. Carol, I don't want to seem suspicious, but...
Yes?
Don't tell her anything about me, except that you're bringing me along.
Oh, no. No, of course not. She wouldn't let me anyway. That's the way the fraudulent mediums work.
Oh? There are frauds among them?
Oh, plenty of them. You know, they get the information from some mutual friend, then pretend they're getting it from a supernatural source.
And she doesn't.
I'm sure of it.
So far, so good. I'd met Carol Sharp. I'd convinced her, in a snide sort of way, that I was intrigued with this psychic phenomena business. I was well on the way to meeting the medium who had sparked this whole case. And later tonight, thanks to Sergeant Randy Singer of the NYPD, I'd attend a seance calculated to be my first step in finding out how the phonies in the racket impress their customers. There was just one more person to meet, Tony Ricardo, whom Carol wanted to name, along with the medium, as beneficiary of her big insurance policy. By the time Carol and I finished cocktails, I was sorry I'd made any plans for the evening. But I was already late for my meeting with Randy at headquarters. I took Carol back to her penthouse and then dropped into my own suite to pick up a top coat. Somebody had shoved a note under my door.
Mr. Johnny Dollar, if you value your life, you'll stay away from Carol Sharp.
It was unsigned.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, I find out a thing or two about a killer and about a medium not so well done. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. Thank you.
Okay, that was yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey in The Matter of the Medium, Well Done, with an original air date of the 15th of May, 1956. I'll have to play the remaining three quarter-hour dramas next week. My name is Arthur. You've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. This show was previously recorded. Catchy, isn't it? Coming up next is the Worst Boy Guild with CR.